Martha's words.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
So, I'm going to give a talk today. Today is Buddha's, what's called Buddha's Parinirvana, the day we acknowledge that Buddha's passing. So you see, we dulled up the altar a little bit. Shouldn't you dulled up the altar? So we have our usual statue holding the Bodhi leaf, and then you'll see this statue up here with the candle seems to be going a little nut, with the Buddha laying on his right side. This is a posture of the Buddha just before his death. And some evergreens and really cool little light up lotus. But last week I gave a talk on Nenmitsu no Kafu. People remember that? Intimacy? And one of the things I asked is if you would commit to practicing this caring attitude towards everything in your life for 1 week. Anybody do that? Hey. How was it?
Really made a difference.
Anybody else? Yeah.
Made a difference.
All right. So it's interesting to see what difference that makes. What's that difference? And keep it up. And if you didn't do it last week, try it next week. And if you have some confusion, you can listen to my lecture or ask me, question two, what this is to be in response to everything in your life. So, this day, Nehan Ne, we set aside some time to mark the passing of Shakyamuni Buddha and to take a little time to express our gratitude for his life and teaching. And we're going to have a short ceremony after the Dharma talk, in which we'll do a little bit of chanting, and we'll have a special dedication to Shakyamuni Buddha. It's also a time when we recognize the truth of impermanence, of the coming and going of all beings in this life. Shakyamuni Buddha lived a long life. Figure 2,500 years ago, he lived to be 80. Well past retirement age. But even as he grew old and weak, he continued to teach. He taught with his bearing. He taught with his manner, with how he cared for others, and he used speech. I think it's St. Francis that says, you know, well, I'll just translate this to a Buddhist understanding. Preach the Dharma always, and when you need to, use words. So I'm kind of ripping off St. Francis there. He was an active person, a very active person, and by all accounts he was deeply loved. Ananda, his close and deeply trusted aide, was with him for 25 years, took care of him for 25 years. Ananda's life is also really another story, a really wonderful story, but that's not what we're going to talk about today. According to the Maha Parinibbana Sutta, this is an early Buddhist text focused on the end of the Buddha's life. In his 80th year, the Buddha became ill, and he said he would pass away in 3 months. And he told Ananda, "Now I am frail, Ananda, old, aged, far gone in years. This is my 80th year, and my life is spent. Even as an old cart, Ananda, is held together with much difficulty, so the body of the Tathagata," that's another word for the Buddha, "is kept going only with supports." So we can imagine an old man with his close companion of 25 years speaking of frailty, old age, impending death. So it's a kind of touching picture, isn't it? There are some writings that say that the Buddha had hinted to Ananda that if Ananda asked him three times to stay in this life, the Buddha would have continued living. But personally, I think that's kind of cop-out. It's a way of avoiding facing the fact that even Shakyamuni Buddha, as a human individual, would cease to exist as that individual. In his last months, even as he was weak and ill, he walked across northern India. He took it slowly, they say, just a few miles a day. And he stopped and rested and was fed and supported in the villages that he went through. His last meal was, according to the tale, was with a metal worker named Kunda. And the meal made him sick. There's another sutra, Mahayana Sutra, called the Nirvana Sutra. And in that, Buddha is quoted as saying, good men, but we'll translate that to good people, cultivate your minds, be conscientious, and avoid indolence. Now my back hurts, my whole body aches, and I want to lay down like a small infant or someone who is chronically ill. So he entrusted the Dharma to his disciples, and then the sutra says he lay down on his right side like someone who was ill. So again, you get this story, this that's passed down to us, of an old man who is fragile. During his last illness, it is said that the trees broke into bloom, sheltered him, and spread petals over the place where he rested. And many people gathered to bear witness and pay respects. So imagine the scene, you know? Imagine this scene. Ananda is said to have been deeply grieving, and the Sutta says, the Parinibbana Sutra says at one point, he left the grove in which the Buddha was resting and leant against a doorpost and wept. Alas, he said, Ananda, I remain a learner, and the master is about to pass away from me, he who was so kind. So the Buddha, of course, knows all, sees all. And he perceived that Ananda was doing this, and he sent for him. He said, enough now, Ananda. Have I not already repeatedly told you, how is it possible that anything that has been born, has had a beginning, should not die? Such a thing is not possible. So this is impermanence, right? This is... So shortly after this, the Buddha died. He died of food poisoning. So it's a very ordinary death, isn't it? For a great being... Didn't like float up into the sky with. He died of food poisoning as an old, frail man. Impermanence, we know, is a fact in our world. Everything changes, nothing is fixed. Even Shakyamuni Buddha grew old, grew sick, and died. In the Mahayana traditions, Buddha is often has a larger sense, right? A sense that is larger than the historical Buddha. And in the Nirvana Sutra, there's a focus on the undying nature of awakening. But there's no getting around it. In the early Buddhist tradition, they say quite clearly that the person, Shakyamuni Buddha, grew old, sick, and died. This story evokes something in us, I think. And each time I return to it, which is really nice to do once a day, once a year on this day at least, I find I appreciate it in a new way. I consider different aspects of it. Something strikes me. And I wondered, what carried the Buddha for so long? What propelled him? What supported him in his life? And mostly, I think, it's great compassion. It seems to me that great compassion is the heart. Great compassion springs from and is accompanied by great wisdom. This is super important. I talk about this frequently. You know, compassion is not some kind of like mushy, depressed feeling. You know, it's clarity, it's action. When we see clearly the way things are, who we are, who others are, something grows from that. Both wisdom and compassion grow in us the capacity to fully encounter the world of impermanence. And because we are touched by impermanence and allow it to teach us, great wisdom and compassion grow. Yeah. We see others. We see ourselves more clearly. We grow kinder to ourselves and others. We see we're all in the same boat. We are all in the midst of change. We're all learning how to be in this world. Sometimes we struggle. Sometimes we enjoy happiness. We fall down, we get up, we have good days, not good days. Some days we get what we want, some days we really don't get what we want. So in the midst of this, we say, what does it mean to be awake in such a life, this saha world, this world of change? This is the central question, I think, for all of us. For the Buddha is the awakened one, and his teaching guides us in awakening from delusion. Buddha is said to have attained nirvana, complete awakening, complete liberation. And his death is referred to as parinirvana, which is when a person who has, as they say, attained complete enlightenment, when they die, it's like there's a release. Suzuki Roshi said, Nirvana appeared when the Buddha gave up everything, not when he gained something. So this tells us that even though we can say Nirvana was attained, we have to be very careful not to think that it's something that we grasp. Nirvana is liberation. It has the meaning to extinguish the blindness and delusion that binds us and leads us to suffer. Often the image used is of a flame blown out. The burning passions and delusions that keep us bound are extinguished. So one of the things that I found interesting in reading about this image, because I was like, a flame blown out? That just sounds like dire, doesn't it? I mean, we think of like a flame of life, you know, lively. But it's interesting that in India at the time of the Buddha, a flame was understood to be an aspect of the atmosphere that burns fitfully until it is released back into the cool spaciousness of the atmosphere, right? So in other words, nirvana is returning. What is burned up are that which binds us. What's blown out is this fretfulness, and we return to the spaciousness of our true nature. Now, it's also true that a flame is already a part of the atmosphere, right? So even in our fitfulness, in our falling down and getting up, in our bondage, we're already a part of the atmosphere. So that's the Soto Zen way. We're already there, even in our fitfulness, even our delusions. already there. This fitfulness is none other than the spaciousness of our nature. But it's important to think this way, because what's our experience? Our experience sometimes is of this bondage. So, the Nirvana, this big fat book is the Nirvana. This is just the first volume of the Nirvana Sutra. So, it lists all of these ways of understanding liberation. So I'm just going to read three to you. I refer to liberation as immense. This is the Buddha speaking, right? Because it's a sutra. As an ocean has no equal in size, liberation similarly cannot be equated with anything. The absence of any equivalent is precisely what true liberation is, and true liberation is what the Tathagata, the Buddha, is. As an ocean has no equal in size, liberation cannot be equaled with anything. Liberation is not oppressive. Moreover, it can be compared to the sun and the moon that do not oppress living things. In like manner, liberation contains nothing that could be oppressive to living beings. To say there is nothing oppressive is thus a figurative way to express true liberation, and true liberation is precisely what the Tathagata is. And finally, in addition, I refer to liberation as something that cannot be grasped, like an illusory object that cannot be grasped, that one cannot grasp. True liberation, similarly, is something that one cannot grasp. What cannot be grasped describes what true liberation is, and true liberation is what the Tathagata is. So there are just pages of these metaphors, these ways of pointing to something. So in this sutra, the Tathagata, the Buddha, is awakening. So the passing away of Shakyamuni Buddha is not the passing away of Buddha. Nirvana is not bound by time and space. It cannot be squeezed into categories of thought. It is. So all of these metaphors, everything that we can talk about in this way, point us to something that's beyond our usual thinking. But just like a fretful flame, it also includes our thinking. When we honor the passing of Shakyamuni Buddha, we are honoring life as impermanence and that which is not captured or contained within our categories of thought or time. Entering the world of impermanence with all beings, we know ourselves to be one of this world, and great compassion flowers. As we are enfolded in, supported by, and express this great compassion, we enact a life of vow, right? We enact it. It becomes real. Dogen Zenji talks about show, realization, making real. It's the acting, it's the doing, it's the living that makes liberation real. This is Buddha's activity. This is Buddha's life. Dogen Zenji, the founder of our school, says, "Our lives arise and perish within each moment. Boom, boom, boom. Right. Their swiftness is like this. Moment after moment, we should not forget this. While being within this swiftness of arising and perishing in each moment, if we arouse one single thought of ferrying others before ourselves," in other words, taking up this vow, this practice, "the eternal longevity of the Tathagata immediately manifests itself." You want to hear that again?
Yes.
Okay. "Our lives arise and perish within each moment. Their swiftness is like this. Moment after moment, we should not forget this. While being within this swiftness of arising and perishing in each moment within it, if we arouse one single thought of ferrying others before ourselves, the eternal longevity of the Tathagata immediately manifests itself. So we are within this life of passing, of moment by moment, arising and passing, arising and passing, impermanent, swift, swift, swift. We should not forget that. We shouldn't turn away from that, try and concoct some world in which we think that's not true. We need to be in it. So we are in this, and within this, if we arouse a single thought of being of service to others, we say ferrying people, bringing the Dharma alive in people's lives, which is, and I say this over and over again, listening to your cranky neighbor, getting on the bus with kindness, letting people ahead of you in the grocery store, sitting zazen, bowing before the Buddha, all of it, right? If we have one thought, just one thought, you have to be successful. You just have to try. If we arouse one single thought of ferrying others before ourselves, the eternal longevity of the Tathagata immediately manifests itself. Awakening is present. The Buddha is alive in that moment. So, staying close to impermanence, to arising and ceasing, we stay close to our shared life, right? That we're all in this together. Our shared life with all being. And when we do that, we see differently. We hear differently. We hear the Buddha's voice across the millennia. We hear the teaching. We're guided by the teaching. And we find our connection with others. Our heart opens sometimes. Sometimes we have gratitude for the life and the teachings of Shakyamuni Buddha. Have you ever had the feeling like, wow, thank God I've got some practice to rely on? Because I'd be at sea otherwise. You know, you get cranky and you think, oh yeah, right. We're all in this together. That's one thought. One thought. One thought. So when we open ourselves, this is a very down-to-earth way. It's simple. It's not easy, but it's simple. We open ourselves to this world. We're of this world. We open ourselves to each other and all beings. We see reality beyond our self-centered desire or expectation. Doesn't mean that we don't care for ourselves, respect ourselves. But we have a broader view, a broader experience. So we take part in reality in which the eternal longevity of the Tathagata, the Buddha, is manifest. Isn't that cool? I mean, really, to know that the eternal longevity of the Tathagata, the Buddha, is present in this moment, I think that's pretty cool. So we do this simply day by day. We sit zazen. We work. We enact Buddha way. And we do that in the world of impermanence. There's a painting, a famous painting, and I don't know where it is. I saw it. They used to have a copy of it at San Francisco Zen Center, kind of in a back hallway. And it was a painting of the arhats, the Buddha's disciples, after his death. It's a very touching image. It's like absolute grief, absolute bereftness. And there's a story in the, I don't know which, whether it's the Nibbana Sutra or the Nirvana Sutra, where they speak of the disciples that haven't really understood this teaching. They throw themselves on the ground, they're grieving, they're just, you know, our teacher is gone. This is image of having lost the awakened one, the one who lights the way, perhaps lost the way itself. Have you ever had that feeling? Some point in our lives, I think we all feel this. Maybe many times we lose a loved one, we lose heart, we lose our way. And then we can hear Buddha's teachings. If we stop beyond space and time, if we listen, we might hear. And we're recalled in that moment to the truth of our lives. Who we are, how we are. This is refuge. This is known as refuge. So we can't put this into a neat category. We can't know it or grasp it. Just like we can't grasp our lives. But we can listen to the truth of this teaching that Buddha bequeathed to us. We can care for our world. And when we do that, we honor Shakyamuni Buddha's teachings. And we follow Dogen Zenji's teachings. Our lives arise and perish within each moment. Moment after moment, we don't forget it. Or when we do forget it, we remember it. We commit to arousing just one thought of dedicating ourselves to this life of being awake with all beings, serving in a vital, hopefully fun way. Fun sometimes, hard sometimes. And in that moment, we know that the eternal longevity of the Tathagata manifests itself. Thank you. Questions?